Imagine, just for a second, that you're zipping a file. We've all done it like a million times.
Oh, yeah. Constantly.
Right. You right-click a folder, you hit compress, and you just sort of sit there watching that little loading bar inch across the screen.
And it's so boring.
It is. You probably think of it as this completely static mathematical chore, right? Like it feels like there's just some dumb background process mechanically squishing your data into a smaller digital box.
Right, just a rigid algorithm following fixed instructions.
Exactly. But what if, instead of that, the process was actually an AI?
Okay, now that changes things.
Yeah. And not just a generic AI, but one that like actively learns the underlying physics of your specific data, dynamically navigating through it to shrink it down.
It completely shifts the entire paradigm of how we interact with digital storage. I mean, we really have to stop looking at compression as background utility, you know?
Right.
We have to start seeing it as an active, highly intelligent process.
And that is exactly what we're exploring in our deep dive today. We're looking at a framework document that details something called self-learning AI compression.
Which is fascinating source material.
It really is. It's built on this radical concept known as conditional collapse theory, or CCT. It basically strips away the idea of compression being an impenetrable black box where data goes in and a smaller file pops out.
Yeah, it turns it into a dynamic self-learning entropy navigation system.
Entropy navigation. I love that phrase.
It perfectly captures the ambition here, honestly. Like, if you have ever felt overwhelmed by the sheer volume of data in the world, this exploration is going to completely change how you view a simple computer file.
Oh, 100%. We're basically looking at the foundational rules of data storage being rewritten. But, to actually let an AI loose on our data, we can't keep thinking of files as just ones and zeros,
No,
right?
not at all.
Because an AI can't dynamically navigate a binary yes or no. It needs space to maneuver.
Yeah.
So we literally have to leave bits behind.
We do. And the source material talks about converting binary data into complex numbers using something called the semantic Fourier transform.
Okay, semantic Fourier transform. Let's unpack that.
Yeah, it's a vital first step, and it is a massive departure from standard computing. In the traditional view, data is strictly binary. A bit is a bit.
Right, it's a zero or a one.
Exactly. There's no in between. It's just absolute.
See, I always picture traditional binary data like this ridiculously long, completely flat hallway filled with millions of on and off light switches.
That's a really good visual.
Thanks. But like, if you want to understand the patterns in that hallway, or if you want to compress it, you basically have to walk down the entire length of the hallway, checking every single switch one by one. It's flat and it takes forever.
Yeah, that's exactly how standard data parsing works. But the CCT framework entirely discards that flat hallway view.
Good, because that hallway sounds exhausting.
It really is. So instead of treating data as bits, it uses that semantic Fourier transform to map the data onto the complex plane. So a bit is no longer a zero or a one, it actually becomes a probability amplitude.
A probability amplitude, so it represents uncertainty.
Yes, exactly. It's uncertainty before a final value has been locked in. So an entire file is no longer a linear sequence of switches.
What does it become then?
It becomes a trajectory in a complex, multidimensional space. The framework uses an ODE to map this.
Well, like, let's make sure we ground that. An ordinary differential equation, right?
Right, an ODE.
In this context, that sounds less like a high school math problem and more like, I don't know, a continuous GPS algorithm charting a path through physical space.
That is exactly what it's doing. Instead of jumping mechanically from block to block, an ODE charts a smooth, continuous trajectory through a mathematical landscape.
Okay, but why complex numbers specifically? I mean, what is the actual mechanical advantage of introducing real and imaginary mathematical parts to something like my grocery list or my vacation photos?
Well, because the inherent properties of complex numbers perfectly align with the goals of compression. Think about what a complex number gives you. First, you have the magnitude.
Like the absolute value, the size of the number.
Exactly. In this CCT system, that magnitude directly represents the data's weight or its redundancy.
Oh, so a higher magnitude might mean a highly repeated pattern.
Yes. And second, you have the phase, which is the angle of the complex number. This represents pattern alignment.
Okay, so to go back to my hallway of light switches,
Let's do it.
by mapping it with complex numbers, it's like we've pulled that flat hallway up into a massive 3D topographic map.
I like where you're going with this.
Right. So the magnitude creates the peaks for highly redundant data, And the phase creates the valleys for unique patterns.
Yes.
And suddenly, the AI doesn't have to walk the entire hallway. It can just look at the 3D map, see two peaks that are identical, and build a shortcut bridge between them.
Exactly. You are finding spatial relationships that are completely invisible in a flat binary format. And the math allows for even more sophisticated maneuvers, too.
Like what?
Well, in complex math, you have a concept called rotation. Okay. If the AI is looking at your 3D map and the path through the valleys isn't super clear, it can mathematically rotate the transform basis.
Wait, it just spins the map?
Essentially, yeah. It shifts the perspective. Say, moving from a fast Fourier transform perspective to a wavelet transform perspective until the most compressible path reveals itself.
That is so smart.
And finally, every complex number has a conjugate, which is essentially its mirror image. In this system, the conjugate perfectly maps to the decompression path.
Which means the AI always leaves a trail of breadcrumbs.
Right.
So it knows exactly how to get back to the original file.
Yeah.
That is incredible. But if data is now this 3D complex landscape, compression isn't just squishing the map together, is it?
No, not at all. The framework uses a very specific term for what is happening on this landscape. It calls it entropy collapse.
Entropy collapse. Okay, so compression in the CCT framework is defined exclusively as that collapse.
Right. It is a physical dynamic process of taking all that uncertainty, all those probability amplitudes spread across your 3D map, and forcing them down into a single precise point.
And it has a very specific target for that collapse, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember the framework stating the AI is constantly measuring real-time entropy and trying to drive it below 0.27.
Yes, 0.27.
Not zero, but that specific threshold of certainty.
Exactly. To understand how we actually force that collapse to happen, we have to talk about what the framework calls superbyte theory.
Oh, superbyte theory. I loved this part.
It's where the departure from traditional computing gets even more profound. So let's think about a standard byte for a moment.
Okay.
In normal computing, a byte is just a static combination of 8 bits, representing a fixed number from 0 to 255.
Right. So it's the letter A, or a specific shade of blue in an image. It's already locked in.
Exactly. But in superbyte theory, before the compression process finishes, a byte isn't just one of those fixed values.
What is it?
The AI treats it as a 256-dimensional probability distribution. Yeah, it has incredibly high entropy, meaning it is highly unpredictable. The superbyte represents all 256 possible values. It could be simultaneously weighted by probability.
Wait, so the AI is treating a single byte of my data like Schrodinger's cat?
Yes.
Like, until the AI actually observes it and forces it to compress, that byte is sitting in the state of superposition. It's all 256 possible values at once.
Schrodinger's byte. That is a brilliant analogy.
Thanks. I mean, standard compression algorithms definitely don't do this.
No, they don't. They just statically shrink files based on a fixed dictionary. But this AI system is actively monitoring the entropy of the superbyte in real time.
It measures how spread out the probabilities are.
Right. And it guides this byte evolution from a state of superposition down to a single certainty using what is called a replicator ODE.
Wait, if this replicator ODE is what actually steers the probability, you know, trying to force the Schrodinger's byte to collapse into the correct final value, it can't just be nudging those probabilities randomly, right?
No, of course not.
Because if it just guessed blindly across 256 dimensions, that would cost a massive amount of computing power.
It would be wildly inefficient.
So it must use some kind of context. Like, if it knows it's compressing a text file, it should automatically know that a standard letter is way more likely to appear than some random system control code.
You have just perfectly deduced what the framework calls semantic bias.
Oh, semantic bias.
Yeah, the AI doesn't guess blindly. It leverages context. If the data is text, the semantic bias heavily influences the replicator ODE to concentrate probability around ASCII printable characters.
That makes total sense. And if it's an audio file?
The bias shifts toward continuous waveforms. This context drastically speeds up the collapse because the AI starts with a highly educated guess about where the probability should ultimately land.
And once that real-time entropy measurement drops below that magic target of 0.27, the superposition breaks.
Yes. The high entropy possibility becomes a low entropy, compressed certainty.
Okay, that makes so much sense. But it leads to a huge mechanical question for me.
Go for it.
How does the AI actually interrogate the data to force that collapse?
Mm.
The source material mentions algorithms, but it frames them differently. It says the AI plays a game of 20 questions with the data.
Yeah, and this is where standard recognizable algorithms are repurposed. In traditional compression, an algorithm is just a brute force tool.
That's right.
But in the CCT framework, algorithms are mapped to CCT questions. The AI asks these questions to systematically strip away uncertainty.
Okay, let's ground that with an example. If I'm zipping a file normally, I might use a standard format that relies on an algorithm like LZ77.
Sure.
How does this AI turn an old algorithm like LZ77 into a question?
Well, LZ77 is a classic dictionary-based algorithm, right?
Yeah.
So in this framework, applying LZ77 is equivalent to the AI asking the data a very specific question. Are there repeated substrings in this block?
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So if the data is a text document full of repeated words like the and end, the answer to that question provides a massive amount of certainty.
And the entropy collapses significantly.
Okay.
What about something like Huffman coding? That's another standard one.
Huffman coding asks, what is the symbol frequency?
Ah, so it wants to know which specific characters appear most often so it can assign them the shortest possible code.
All right. And then you have an algorithm like deflate, which is ubiquitous in modern ZIP files.
Yeah, deflate is everywhere.
Deflate essentially asks a compound question. It asks, can we combine the substring search of LZ77 with the frequency search of Huffman to achieve a very high collapse potential?
Okay, so when I normally compress a file, my computer is just blindly running deflate over the entire document from start to finish, hoping for the best.
Very much.
But this AI system is looking at the data block by block, treating it like a dynamic game of 20 questions.
Yes, block by block. Which brings us to the TSP part of the framework. The question TSP.
Oh, right. TSP stands for the traveling salesperson problem, right? The classic math puzzle, where you have to find the absolute shortest possible route to visit a list of cities.
Precisely. But here, the cities aren't geographic locations.
The cities are the algorithms.
Exactly.
So the AI is mapping out the absolute shortest route of questions to ask the data. It's trying to figure out the exact sequence of algorithms that will force the entropy below 0.27 as fast as possible.
And this raises a critical mathematical trade-off that the AI has to balance continuously.
A trade-off.
Yeah, the AI isn't just randomly throwing questions at the data until it shrinks. It is constantly calculating a risk-reward scenario.
Okay, what are the variables?
On one side of the equation, you have the compute cost, which the framework denotes as W subscript I. Every time the AI asks a question, every time it runs an algorithm, it costs CPU cycles, it costs time and energy.
Right, and on the other side?
On the other side, you have the entropy reduction denoted as delta subscript I.
So before the AI runs LZ77, it mathematically asks itself, is the energy I'm about to spend running this algorithm worth the amount of compression I'm going to get back?
Exactly. It wants the biggest bang for its computational buck.
That makes sense.
Like, if the AI is looking at a block of completely random white noise, asking, are there repeated substrings, is a terrible question.
Because there aren't any patterns to find.
Right. It will waste CPU cycles and yield almost no entropy reduction. The AI will dynamically bypass that question.
Oh, wow.
And the key here is that it performs this dynamic optimization for every single block of data individually.
So it might ask a completely different sequence of questions for paragraph one of a document than it does for paragraph two.
Exactly. Entirely dependent on the localized entropy of that specific paragraph.
That is just wildly sophisticated compared to our current one-size-fits-all zip files.
It really is.
But honestly, as I picture this, you have this AI rapidly firing off different algorithms, dynamically changing its entire strategy block by block, treating bytes as 256-dimensional probabilities, constantly calculating compute costs.
It's a lot going on.
It sounds completely chaotic. If it's experimenting with the data that aggressively, how does it manage this high-speed game of 20 questions without just totally corrupting the original file?
That is the ultimate engineering challenge of a self-learning system. You cannot have an AI experimenting so wildly that it breaks the data.
Right. So how do they stop that?
The framework solves this by enforcing a strict architectural rulebook, which is based on what they call the stationary versus probability split.
Okay, a split between what can change and what absolutely cannot. Let's start with the unbreakable side. What are the stationary elements?
The stationary elements are defined as information invariance. These are the fundamental, unalterable laws of your specific data.
Like what?
The framework names a few, like Kolmogorov complexity and Shannon entropy downs.
Okay, before we go further, what do those actually mean for my data in plain English? Because Kolmogorov complexity sounds incredibly dense.
It is a profound concept, but it's actually pretty easy to grasp.
Okay, lay it on me.
Chromograph complexity is simply the absolute shortest possible computer program or description that can produce your data.
Give me an example.
Okay, if your file is just the letter A repeated 1 million times, the Kolmogorov complexity is very low. The instruction is just print A 1 million times.
Oh, okay. Simple.
But if your file is 1 million completely random, unpatterned characters, there is no shortcut. The shortest way to describe it is just to provide the entire random file itself.
I see. That makes perfect sense. And the Shannon entropy bounds.
That is the theoretical maximum limit of compression. It is the absolute floor.
So you can't go past it.
Exactly. If you try to compress the data beyond its Shannon limit, you start destroying the actual information. You start losing pixels in a photo or dropping words from a document.
So these information invariants are the stationary elements.
Yes. The framework explicitly states their role. They bend for nothing. They must be protected at all costs to ensure that when you eventually decompress the file, you get your exact bit-for-bit original data back.
Okay, so the stationary elements are the fragile cargo. They cannot be touched. So what about the probability side of the split?
The probability elements are the representation variables. This is where the AI has total freedom to adapt, experiment, and shift.
What kind of variables are we talking about?
This includes things like the encoding scheme, the block size the AI chooses to look at, the dictionary size it builds, the transform basis it uses to rotate the 3D map.
Ah, all the flexible tools.
Exactly. The framework says of these elements, they bend for everything.
You know, this makes me think of an analogy.
Let's hear it.
Standard compression, like the basic ZIP files we use today, is like a cargo train on fixed tracks.
Okay, yeah.
It is incredibly safe. It won't damage the cargo, but it can only go exactly where the tracks go. It does what it was programmed to do, regardless of whether it's carrying a shipment of pillows or a shipment of glass. It is completely rigid.
Completely rigid. It cannot adapt to the terrain.
Right. But this CCT framework is like a highly advanced, heavily engineered off-road rover.
I like that.
It is carrying that incredibly fragile, precious cargo, the original data, the stationary information invariants.
Yeah.
But to protect that fragile cargo while driving over wildly unpredictable terrain at high speeds, the rover is dynamically, continuously adjusting its suspension.
Yes.
It's changing its tire pressure. It's altering the torque to individual wheels. Those adjustments, the suspension and the tire pressure, are the probability variables.
That is spot on.
The AI is bending and adapting its own mechanics in real time, so the cargo inside never feels a single bump.
That is a fantastic mechanical visualization. And those specific adjustments the rover is making are explicitly mapped out and controlled by a 16-element compression matrix within the AI's architecture.
So there's essentially a master control panel for the rover.
Exactly.
The source material highlights a few specific nodes on this matrix. I assume one of them is dedicated to making sure the rover doesn't just drive off a cliff.
Oh, definitely. That would be node EO1, the entropy bound. This is the ultimate stationary element.
And guardrail.
Yes, it strictly protects that Shannon limit we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
EO1 ensures the AI never gets so aggressive with its compression questions that it starts destroying the original data.
Got it. And what about the adaptable parts? How does it decide what question to ask next?
That is governed by node EO4, algorithm select. This is a highly adaptable probability element.
So that's the steering wheel.
Exactly. It decides the trajectory direction by choosing the next algorithmic question based on the terrain. Does the map look like it needs a Huffman question or a wavelet question? EO4 makes that call.
And it has to balance that with the fuel gauge, right? The compute cost.
Yes. That is managed by node E12, the compute cost node.
Okay.
E12 meticulously tracks the CPU cycles page perform the compression. It is the AI constantly monitoring its energy reserves, ensuring it doesn't waste massive compute power on a question that will yield terrible entropy reduction.
And when it finally finishes the whole process, what happens then?
It reaches node E16, compression stability. This is the finish line.
E16.
Yeah. E16 confirms that the target state has been reached, that the real-time entropy, H, has successfully dropped below 0.27. Once all the variables have bent, the invariants have been guarded, and the questions have been answered, E16 verifies the state of successful collapse.
It's just mesmerizing that it can balance all of this simultaneously. And the source material argues that this specific matrix is what makes the AI genuinely self-learning, operating under something called the CCT-ULP protocol.
The Universal Learning Protocol. This is perhaps the most important takeaway of the whole framework.
Why is that?
Because everything is routed through this 16-element matrix, the AI doesn't just blindly execute a script. It actually learns what the concept of compression means by constantly testing entropy resistance against these 16 nodes.
So it's building an intuition.
Exactly. Every time it encounters a totally new, unseen file type, it tests its algorithmic questions. It measures how much compute energy it costs versus how much entropy is reduced. It refines its semantic bias based on the results.
And crucially, because it has to log every single decision through those 16 nodes, it completely eliminates the black box problem.
Yes.
You could theoretically open up the matrix after a file is compressed and see the exact step-by-step element trace of why the AI made the choices it did.
Exactly. It provides a perfectly explainable ledger of its own thought process. It is a transparent, self-correcting engine that autonomously discovers the physical laws of compression for any given data set.
Wow.
It is a profound evolutionary leap from humans manually tuning algorithm parameters to an automatic entropy-gated intelligence.
It truly is. So to recap the massive journey we've taken today.
Let's hear it.
We started by taking our flat, static, binary ones and zeros and using the semantic Fourier transform to pull them up to a complex 3D mathematical landscape.
Right.
We reimagined a simple byte of data, not as a fixed number, but as a Schrodinger's cat of 256 probabilities sitting in high entropy superposition.
The super.
Exactly. We learned that an AI forces that uncertainty to collapse by playing a high-speed, mathematically optimized game of 20 questions, actively balancing compute cost against compression gains.
Using the traveling salesperson problem.
Yes. And it manages all of this chaos by acting like an off-road rover, using a 16-element matrix to bend its probability variables while fiercely protecting the fundamental invariance of our data.
It is an unbelievably elegant synthesis of information theory, complex mathematics, and artificial intelligence.
It really is.
You know, the next time you seamlessly stream a 4K video over a cellular network, or you zip a massive folder to email to a colleague, you should take a moment to appreciate the profound mathematical journey required to shrink that data down. It is so much more than just a background utility.
It is a dynamic, self-learning physics engine actively operating on your digital life, which leads me to a final, entirely different thought for you to ponder.
Oh, here we go.
We have just spent all this time talking about a silicon AI learning to perfectly compress digital data by mapping it to complex landscapes and asking targeted algorithmic questions to collapse its entropy into low entropy superbytes.
Right.
But could human memory work the exact same way? Think about it. Do our own biological brains compress the massive, complex, high-entropy experiences of our daily lives into low-entropy biological superbytes?
That is a wild thought.
Right. Okay. Like, are our brains running their own unconscious replicator ODEs, constantly asking questions of our experiences? Is this repetitive? Have I felt this exact emotion before, just to collapse the overwhelming entropy of a day into a memory small enough for us to store?
I mean, we do have to discard a lot of information to remember things.
Exactly. And if so, when we recall that memory years later, what fragile nuances get lost in our own biological decompression? If the AI is learning the fundamental physics of our data, maybe it is really just mirroring the fundamental physics of our own minds.
That is definitely something to chew on.
We will leave you to think about that one. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.